Welcome to The Truth in This Art, your source for conversations at the crossroads of arts, culture, and community. I am your host, Rob Lee. Today, I'm excited to welcome my next guest, a Biloxi, Mississippi-born and Baltimore-based self-taught artist elevating portraiture using ballpoint pens, drawing inspiration from a myriad of life experiences. Please welcome Tommy Mitchell. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for pulling up, making the time. Literally, you notice what I did with the pulling up, right?
Definitely. Come on. Sure. I know the vibes. Hezzy pull 2020. Come on. I'm ready right now. I got my stuff on the floor. Like, I'm hoping there's a gym close. There's an LA Fitness across the street.
Oh, I'm just doing protein shakes and banging weights. I'm not even hitting the you know, again, thank you for making the time. It's truly an honor to have you. And, you know, to kick things off, I did the online, you know, copy and paste, you know, artist by artist statement sort of thing. But I like to give, you know, folks that join me for this podcast the opportunity to describe themselves, like their bio. How do they present themselves? Right. You know, there are folks who, and I've gotten this before, where I'll do an intro, did all of the, put myself in character, right? And I'm like, you forgot a detail, bro. I was like, what's the detail? I'm a human first. I'm like, all right, I'm going to stop putting it on y'all. Y'all got to introduce yourself. So if you will, give us your bio.
I feel like every artist talk, I always start with athlete, artist, creative, visionary, vessel. I'm constantly evolving, whether that be through my work, my experiences, what I'm learning, just always seeking information and how I could implement it and share it and just, you know, grow. So constant evolution.
Evolution is key. I think it's tied to ambition, right? Like, you know, I have these conversations with folks and, you know, as I was saying earlier, before we got started, where I'm at in the sort of cycle of interviews, that's, as I call it, riding the wave. And, you know, being kind of your toughest critic, but also like, I'm good at this though, you know, kind of doing that, waxing and waning through that. So as far, and thank you for sharing that, by the way, your
of course, thank you.
Athlete piece wasn't in there. I didn't have that in there. I didn't think about it. You know, you got the thing on you.
I did. Oh yeah.
So talk a bit about your journey creatively, and I always feel weird. Like the word journey feels, it's weird to me, you know.
I use that religiously. On the flight over here, a young lady was watching me draw, and I told her, like, this is all part of my journey. Like, my path, my journey, my exploration.
Sure.
But I use journey the most because that's something that anyone can reference. I try to break it down. I come from a retail background, so I always look at my journey in three phases. The early phase is where I'm in admiration. I'm admiring the comics, the TV shows, magazine covers, so on and so forth. And then the next phase is actually implementation. Now I'm working and drawing and seeing, okay, this is fun, but what else can be done? And then for me, the last phase is actually participating, the participation aspect where I'm in the field, I'm in the trenches now, okay? I'm taking everything from the aspirational phase, the work phase where I'm implementing what I'm learning, and now I'm in the mix. I'm trying to figure out, okay, one, I'm a creative. Two, what's the business look like? Like, they tell you as a kid, starving artist, so on and so forth. And it's like, well, how can I combat that? And for me, I thought, well, if I work retail or if I, you know, have these jobs where I can gain these business experiences or this business acumen, I can take that with me and get paid for it while I'm, you know, working my way up the ladder, marketing, teamwork, discipline, so on and so forth. But, yeah, that's been pretty much my journey, is just implementing what I'm seeing and learning and exploring that and seeing where else can I take it. Yeah. So yeah, it's just, it, I always try to break it down in those three different phases. And after that, you know, who knows what's next? You know, you, it, it could be recycling and starting from scratch with a whole different passion. So,
so, and thank you. So for you, where does it begin? Like, I think we have those points that we'll say that's the beginning, but also there's a real beginning, or that's right. The real one. This is more of the real one. I've shared it before, and actually it happened on this podcast where, you know, I was interviewing an artist and, you know, I was telling him, I was like, I was an MC, you know, I wasn't on a microphone rapping. I was an MC, you know, master's of ceremony for this, you know, graduation as a kid, like 4 or 5. And she's like, that's probably something that has had some impact on you as you've grown up.
Right.
And I never thought about it that way. But, you know, being in dialogue with someone who's also creative and has that sort of mindset, it was like, no, you should explore that a little bit. So
definitely
for you, what was one of those like early moments like in your life that you're like, all right, I like drawing, or oh, I like art, or oh, wow, this is something that's interesting to me.
Yeah. I always think like there's this like Malcolm Gladwell book that I think of often, Outliers. And I think of certain points in my life. I'm like, okay, well, in the early stages, the point was we're in Hampton, Virginia. I'm on the floor drawing. My dad's on the couch. I'm drawing something. And I just remember him saying, Tom, draw what you see. And for me, I'm like, oh, well, you know, I guess I can't be an abstract artist now. But that stuck with me. It's like, okay, if I'm going to do something and it's going to be an image and, you know, a mirror image of that, I want to make sure that the details are there. The line work is like, it's all encompassing. So that was like the first thing that I can think of. But the question I've been asking more recently is, do people who enjoy like cartoons or animation, et cetera, do they stick with it and follow that path in the arts, whatever it may be?
Yeah.
So I just think of stuff like that. But for me, just sitting there drawing and my dad giving me that feedback in real time at an early age, draw what you see. It's like, okay, if I'm going to keep doing this, I want to make sure that I'm executing everything to the utmost, to the highest level, to the nth degree. Yeah. And that to me, I think was the starting point. It's like, okay, everyone's a creative, everyone's an artist, but you know, some of us just stick with it. Yeah. Some of us like, you know what? I want to make this a career. You know, what do I need to do to make it a career? And I've always said, I'll do whatever it takes to go down this path. And thankfully here I am.
That's great. And you know, conversations I've had, I had one earlier, and I think it ties like the, you know, one point, and I had it in the questions I sent your way about, you know, I used to illustrate, I used to draw, and I wanted to be a comic book artist, and you know, I was a capitalist. It's like, yo, I'm gonna sell these ring, you know, sketches for y'all between these tests, and you know, I ended up going to this, you know, doing the entry test to do this art school, and just, you know, confidence kill. I didn't have sort of the, you know, artistic family. I didn't come from that. It was like, I had an uncle. I never met him. He passed before I was born, but that was the artist. So like, you know, I have relatives who weren't really familiar with it. They were familiar with what he did, and they were trying their best to say, hey, here's some art books. Here's, you know, here's some things you're interested in. How can we help, you know, foster and support that? But when it came to that side of it, that's the reason I'm doing podcasting now, or I did writing for a bit, but you know, using, I'll throw a book your way, using the sort of Austin Kleon of it all, you know, it's just like, I don't want to cut off those limbs. I came back eventually, but in a different way. I was like, I have a sense of humor. I know it's funny. I get references. Let's have somebody else illustrate it and let me write it and let me collaborate with my partner and let me make myself a part of that scene and dive in it. And that's kind of the thing that I was hearing there a moment ago of like, whatever sort of the creative practice is, dive in it.
Right. Right. It's, I always think of it like this. I started drawing and I got to a point, I'm like, okay, I can draw until the cows come home. What else can I do? And I dabbled with watercolor, permanent markers, whatever. I just wanted to make the best work possible. And then it became, well, I'll use whatever medium to achieve that. Yeah. And I'm on my, what, third or fourth, probably my fifth year of painting now. I'm fully immersed in that. It's something that I used to be so, I used to talk crazy about painting, actually, and I'm going to get shit for this, but I thought, hey, anyone can paint. Drawing is hard. Like, you gotta be able to, like, you gotta make it look like this person. If not, then, but then I start painting. I'm like, no, this shit is hard too. So, yeah, I mean, it's, and I'll also say this. I've been trying to remove hard from my vocabulary. I don't want to say things are hard. It's either a lack of information or a lack of knowledge. And, you know, that's where I'm at with it. I want to make sure I accumulate or, you know, find that information and gain that knowledge. And then I can no longer be like, oh, that's hard. It's like, no, I put the repetition in and it's not hard anymore. It's doable or it's easy or whatever. So yeah, that's something I always try to implement is how can I turn these negatives into a positive or a strength and progress.
It's putting up those 10,000 shots, right?
Hey, every day, all day. Got to get them shots up.
And it's
got to get them shots up.
It's even in that vein. I know his book, his recent books have been making around the Rick Rubin joint. And it's just,
yes, like,
there's not a, I can, it's more of a, and maybe, I hope I'm attributing to him, but it's not a, I can, it's just like, I haven't done it yet. And it's really
right.
The thing is. And, you know, I go through this and sometimes I, if I'm being completely honest, I'll do these interviews and, you know, you heard about Baltimore come out right there. I'll do these interviews and I'm not sure if I'm a fraud or if I'm a charlatan, right, or something like that, because it's like, I don't have art background. I'm just interested in talking, right, to people and helping provide a platform for them to share their story authentically versus, so tell me about your work. So being a Black artist, it's like, no,
right,
you know, sure, that should be part of the conversation, but shouldn't be the sort of, we got to get these buzzwords and we got to get this keyword search up, you know? And this thing, I think that's sort of the spot that I'm in. No one's coming in, you know, me to hear the, or to, no one's coming to an interview that I'm conducting to hear the snooty, rarefied art conversation.
Right.
So,
So
I think once I got kind of past that and realized what I'm actually doing, but always returning to it, always being curious. And, I think it's good though. You one of the things you mentioned of removing hard from the lexicon, right, if you will. You know, I had to, and Terrell told me this. He's just like, yes, I'm saying try. Yes, that's
right. You either are or you're not.
Yeah. Very Yoda thing he was telling me. So and I saw, and I don't know if this is correct, but I saw that you come from a creative family. You know, you have photographers in your family. So speak a bit about being in that environment as you're developing, you know, the sort of the household environment as you're developing as a creative, as an artist, as someone just exploring and curious about art, and being around folks who are artists, as I shared a moment ago. I didn't really have that around. So it wasn't sort of that competition. It's like, oh yeah, yeah, go ahead and draw. I don't care, whatever you're doing.
Right.
Don't take this job from me, you know, this landscaping job. That's my competition.
So yeah, my dad was a photographer. He paused that when I was born. And my sister is a photographer as well. Now, I will say I don't recall my sister's work until maybe I was, gosh, maybe in high school, give or take. And she'll probably kill me for not knowing, but my mom, it's funny. So I always used to tell people no one in the family is creative, right? And that's a lie because, like I said, my dad and my sister were photographers. My mom told me way after the fact that she drew as well. But I'm going 20 some odd years telling people, I'm like, oh yeah, no one in the family like is a painter or draws, it's just me. And then my mom was like, no, I used to do X, Y, Z. And, you know, this was before you were born. I'm like, man, so everyone stopped what they were doing when I was born. Like, I wish I could have saw more of that. But I'm thankful that they supported me in their own ways. It wasn't traditional support. And I say that because their support looked like, hey, buying supplies. What I'm thinking support was, hey, put me in this art school. And that wasn't my path. And I think my parents knew me so well that I wasn't going to go to art school. I'm a self-taught artist, like you mentioned, but I'm always seeking information. So for me, the school would have been fine as far as like basics and the ground level foundation, but I needed more. I'm always searching. What else? What else? What else? Like I would have wanted them to just give me a bunch of books. Let me figure it out. And I remember my mom put me in this art class when I was in like seventh grade. It was like art class outside of school. So I'm going, and mind you, I'm still drawing faces, portraits, whatever. And the first day, the guy's like, all right, we're going to go outside and draw trees. I'm like, dog, I don't want to draw trees. I want to draw people. Teach me how to draw people better. That's why I'm here.
Yeah.
Like, so needless to say, like that was the only outside art tutorial, not tutorial, but tutelage that I had. And it wasn't very favorable in my journey, but it learned me a lesson of, hey, even though this isn't what you want to do, take something from it. And that's when I started to think there's always a lesson in everything. Maybe, you know, he's looking for something different in me and asking me to draw a tree. But yeah, no, that the family, I'm thankful that I learned later on that, you know, I had other creatives in the household, and I was so selfish to think that it was just me. Like I'm just, you know, the one drawing and bebopping around, but their photography and their photographic eye helped me with symmetry, just the minor details that we would overlook. That helped me a lot in my work. So Kenya, Dad, I'm thankful, you know. So
that's dope. That's dope. It's I think, you know, this is dawning on me now, you know, like as I'm thinking about it. I remember we used to go to my grandmother's house back in the day, right? Mm-hmm. And it would always be that thing where you're trying to determine, well, I would try to determine, all right, when am I an adult? When can I actually have a
right.
When can I hold court? And as I think about it, I'm like, this is a version of that in doing these interviews. Mm-hmm. Have an interesting perspective, have something to say, don't waste people's time. And, right. And I don't know, maybe, and it's just dawning on me as you were describing sort of, you know, the bits and pieces that go into what you do that are coming from a secondhand from your fam. It's making me think of that, of like waiting for that opportunity. Don't blow it. Make sure you say something, right. You know,
mm-hmm.
Oh, ain't gonna be listening to you. Gang will be on soon. So, it's great, especially the black household. When you got something, you know, like, yeah, I gotta make sure. I gotta make sure.
Right. It's gotta be concrete. It's gotta be something that, hey, we can stamp this. All right, you good money around here. And so
100%. So let's shift gears a little bit about, you know, her specifically. So talk a bit about some of the themes that you explore or have you curious, interested or captivated. Like talk a bit about that.
That is something that I feel like isn't asked enough, if I'm being honest. And I have so many ideas and I always want to share it because I'm always seeking, like I said earlier, what else can be done? Anyone can draw a portrait. Anyone. What can you do with it? What story can you tell with it? And I always think, I'm like, I'll even go back even further. I'll rewind further. When I was younger, I said, I want to be able to have a show, let's say, a show in LA, a show in New York, a show in Paris, Tokyo, all these different places all at once. And I say that to say, I wanted to be able to work as efficiently and as fast to be able to give all of those spaces work. And each body of work be different because each body of work represents not only that city, but that experience more so than anything. So yeah, I always want to have a different experience every show, and that's, it's hard because you got to come up with the ideas, et cetera. But at the same time, I feel comfortable in just letting my imagination roam. And I think that's one of my strong suits, is just, I'm a very curious person. I'm always looking for, like I said, the lesson in something, or, you know, an idea in something. I might see a pattern. I'm like, okay, where does this pattern come from? It just becomes a rabbit hole. And that's something I appreciate about my life, is just, hey, I'm always seeking something. Just, I'm such a visual person. Like, I just, my Pinterest is crazy, because I'm like, okay, there's this over here, this. And my mind is the same way. It's just so cluttered. It's like, okay, how do I piece it together? Where do I want to go? And there's this body of work I've been trying to do now for about 3 years, and I just can't. That's a lie. I've done it a couple times, but I really want to delve deep into it. And I feel like the way I want to do it, it's going to take time. And I'm really weird about time. Like, I'm like, look, I want to be able to do it in 3 months. I want to do all the works I want to do for that in 3 months. And I feel like this is probably going to be a year thing. But it's a gift and a curse. I should take the time out to do it, but I also want to share other ideas as well. I feel like that'll be like one of those comeback shows or whatever. Where do I see Jeff Koons at the Guggenheim? I don't know. One of those big shows that just had all his work and then like some new stuff, whatever. Like, I want to do something like that. But yeah, the ideas will never cease to exist. I'm always going to have an idea, and I'm always going to want to share it. It's just a matter of, you know, sitting down, sitting still, and executing it and sharing it with the people.
Execution and time is definitely a thing. I thought I was going to add that question in here. I didn't add it, but, you know, yeah. This thing around, you know, it was that whole rumor about like artists, you guys don't deal with time well and all of this different stuff.
That's a lie.
Right. And that's a lie. I think it's a sort of variance. I think you have some folks who are hyper-structured, and they know how to get their stuff on point. It's like, look, I got 45 minutes for this interview, bro, and I got to get off immediately. And then there are other folks that kind of float through, and then there's somewhere, it's a continuum, somewhere in the middle. When I'm approaching this, like, I'd like to be able to do it. I'll tell, like, guests, like, look, we could do a half an hour, we could do 45, we can do an hour. And I'm already in my head, I'm looking at the max time. I got to block out this time. Yeah. Right. And that's the way I structure it. Or even, you know, this is the thing I have. One of my sort of crowning moments was being able to do like a hyper curated, because I wanted to try it. I was curious to see if I could do it. And it took me almost 3 years to get to it. That's the thing. So, and, you know, it's just booking guests and coming up with something. I did a month focused on jazz musicians and jazz folks in that scene. And I was able to put out like 12 interviews that month that had musicians, and it was in different cities. And I was like, I got New Orleans, I got Philly, I got Baltimore, I got DC. I was like, yo, this is the thing. And I was like, and it was that sort of, as an Aquarius, it was that sort of actualization. It's so like, I made this happen. And actually appreciating it, giving myself credit for it. Cause, you know, in doing this, doing these interviews, doing these conversations, I'm aware of what it is. Like, you know, I mentioned it a little bit earlier, but how other people receive it is the thing that's interesting to me. Like, definitely. Oh, you're just doing this. And it's like, well, the guests seem to like it, you know, or you're really crushing it. It's like, that's cool. You know, and trying to figure out what it is. But me, it's just, again, that the conversation and the relationship with time. At a point, I did 300 plus interviews in a year with the day job, with all of the things that I have to do. One day I had 6 interviews with all of the other stuff that I have to do. One week I had 18 interviews. And it's like, I don't have the time issue. I don't have the time challenge, but it's like my concept of time, I suppose, is different. Almost to the degree where I would almost do too much work. You know, I would almost do too many things. So thinking of like a piece that comes to mind, how labor intensive, what are the hours? What's the, you know, the strokes, if you will, that go into, you know, a piece, like, you know, maybe something recent, maybe something that comes to mind specifically, but what does that look like for you? Like how tight is that wrist?
All right, getting shots up, working on pieces. I think to piggyback off, you know, multitasking and having a job and doing what you're passionate about. When I was working at Apple for about 3 years. And that was kind of like a pivotal point for me because I was doing shows, I was getting more opportunities, et cetera. So I'm trying to juggle a girlfriend at the time, a job, and my passion, my work, my craft. So I would take work to work. And people were like, you're going to work on that here? And I'm like, yeah, like I don't want to be here. I want to be, you know, showing my workplaces. So for me, I looked at it as every second I had that wasn't on the clock, I was working. And you get 2 15-minute breaks and an hour break. So 15 minutes, cool. I'm going to work on my thing. An hour, I'm going to for an hour work on it. And then the next 15, I'd work on it again. And then afterwards, I go to the studio and work some more. But I was just so hungry and adamant on achieving my goals and exceeding them that I didn't care if I was at work working on my work because this is what I'm supposed to do with my life. I felt like my job was my secondary job. Like, so when COVID hit, I don't want to put Apple's business out there, but we got paid to just be home. So I'm like, all right, this is cool. I'm going to the studio. So now I'm getting paid to be at the studio. Right. And then when I sell these works, I'm getting paid twice. So I looked at it as like, Apple's helping me. They're pushing me to get into my craft full time. It's like, okay, well, what does your schedule look like? All right, I'm going to wake up early, you know, put all this hours in, et cetera. But to answer the question, as far as the work, like I mentioned earlier, I'm impatient. I work pretty fast. I know Terrell's going to hate me for saying that, but I just really love what I do. So I spend long hours working. I might work from 7 to, let's say, here's how I put it. If it's off, what's the word I'm looking for? If there's not a show coming up, I might work from like 7 to 5. Because 5 is usually when I play basketball every day. But if there's a show coming up, I might work from 6 to midnight, 6 to 1 a.m. I'll have breaks in there to eat. I'll still go to the gym, play basketball. I might take a nap at the studio. But I always look at it like I got to stretch my days out. That way I can put more work in. And yeah, let's say a regular piece, depending on the size, probably would take a week. And now that I feel like I'm more comfortable as a painter, the painting aspect is, it's insane. It's easier for me than the drawing aspect. I feel like the drawing is still labor intensive, but I just learned from other artists. I'm very observant. I'm not afraid to ask questions. I always reach out to like my favorite artists and thankfully they respond back, and that hopefully that's because I'm asking the right questions. But they'd be like, oh, you know, I work 4, 5, 6, 7 hours. I'm like, wow, that's not a lot. I'm just shocked, but that's not a knock to them. It's I'm thinking, wow, what you do is so amazing, you would think it takes more time. So I looked at it as, okay, if they're using let's say 4 hours, for example, and I'm using 12, I want to use 4 hours of work, 4 hours of learning, and then 4 hours of seeking more information or seeking how can I tie everything in. So I had like a game plan, and which is really weird because I always tell women that I date, I'm not a planner. Like I'm go with the flow guy. That's not my bag. I'm spontaneity all day. Just there's no structure. I wake up. I know what needs to be done. I go do it. Yeah. But I've learned that I kind of am a planner. It's just in my own little way. I always think I'm a strategist. I'm always thinking of every possible outcome and how to get there, what could happen, and how can I pivot. But yeah, to answer the question, the time thing, I try not to take too long because that means the work that I've put in all over these years, something's wrong. The mechanic, hey, shoot 1,000 jumpers a day. If I'm shooting it wrong, it's still, hey, doesn't matter. Yep. But you got to have the right approach. The mechanics has got to be right. That way, once it comes game time, all those shots you're going to feel comfortable with, it's going to go in. Not every time, but a better percentage of the time. So I say that to say, if all the time that I spent making sure I'm perfecting my details, I'm looking at one of the pictures now, just details and the shading and the shadows and so on and so forth. I feel comfortable doing that. If I'm taking too long on that, then I feel like I need to step away or I need to do something else, because this probably isn't going to be the one that's going to be finished.
What is in that? What is the most challenging, or the part that of your process that you dislike the most, or you find the most challenging? And I ask that because you had me thinking. I started thinking of a system, right, and doing this. I would just go at it. My thing is, like, I throw effort at stuff, and I look at the job as my funder, and I'm like, that funds this, and my lunch breaks, I don't really take lunch. I'm up super early, so I'm going to put in, you know, sort of this is not the work part. This is the fun part.
Right.
The work part is coming up with questions to try to ask something that's meaningful, that's interesting, and I go over my questions 4 or 5 times. The questions that I sent you when we originally scheduled this, I've changed those questions since multiple times. And but in it, you know, I remember talking with a dude that I was because I work in data and in IT, and I remember talking with this dude, and I was just like, "Yo, so I do X amount of podcasts, and this was when it was super slow, probably pre COVID." And he was like, "How many hours are you putting in, and what's the output?" And I was like, "I'm putting in probably," because I was editing at them at the time, so I have an editor now. So I was just like, yeah, I do about 1.5 hours research. The interview's about 1 hour. And then I'm doing 1.5 hours, 2 hours of editing. And then I have to do the distribution, and then the Canva, da ba 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 ba. And he was like, yeah, what part of that can you offload? And that's really what he went with. And now my process is so tight that I just bring in someone I train people to, you know, let me have an assistant. I need to do this part of it. I need to do the questions. But the other things doesn't really take, quote unquote, talent to do that. I need to be involved in this part. But the questions and the sort of back and forth through it, that is the most challenging part for me in doing this. I don't even care about when it goes out. Like, I do to a degree that you want people to like your stuff, but
definitely
can't really control that. But what I can control is sort of this portion of it, this side of it. So for you, you know, with all of my explanation, for you, what is the part of your process you're like, I cannot skip that, but it's important.
That's why I laughed when you said it, because I'm always thinking, I'm like, look, I'm 100% credit guy. Like, I want all the credit. Like, I don't want to share this shit with nobody, whatever. But at the same time, I know to scale and to reach where I'm trying to go, I'm going to need help. And in retail, that was management, leadership, so on and so forth. And the thing that everyone gave me feedback on, no matter what job or what place I worked at, was like, hey, you do amazing work, you're great, but you need to learn how to delegate. And that is something that no matter what I do, I want to do it. And I feel more comfortable now in the last probably year or so. But to answer the question, what could I do? It's little stuff. Like, if I can have someone come in and mount the paper on the panel, maybe, because I think about this often, document the process. I told the lady on the plane, I'm like, I work too fast to be documenting what I do. Like, I'm too impatient. I got shit to do. I got other stuff to do. Like, I can't just be sitting here setting up my tripod and, like, I feel bad about people who follow me, because, like, look, all I want to do is post basketball videos. That's it. Like, I'm sorry, this is a Michael Jordan Stan account, but sometimes sometimes I draw.
That's great.
Sometimes I draw, but the documentation, helping me mount the paper on the panels, cutting the paper out, stretching the paper, Let me think what else. Titles, pricing, like you get into it's no different than anything someone's passionate about. Once the business aspect comes into play, it's like, oh, this doesn't feel fun anymore.
Yep.
But for me, I don't look at it that way. I just feel like I always think, how can I turn those weaknesses into strengths? Mm-hmm. So it's, how can I become, back to square one or back to earlier, how can I become more efficient at that? If I don't have anyone, or if I don't want to pay for anyone to do so, how can I, you know, knock that out in an efficient manner? So I say all that to say, you know, those are the things that I wish, not even wish, I should probably have someone do. But I also like being hands-on. I feel like it's more recent now that I feel like a real artist. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And I feel I'm not just drawing it, putting it in a frame and then selling it. So it's stuff like that, that I just feel, maybe that's the thing. I feel accomplished when I do those other things. It's all for me, a part of the experience on my end that I'm able to speak to once I do have shows and, you know, have those conversations with people. But yeah, I laugh because that there's a lot of stuff I'm like, you know, I probably don't have to do this. Like I could be doing more. I do a lot of work now, but I can probably do even, you know.
The efficiency part that you touched on, it mm-hmm. makes a lot of sense. And I'll use this. You may find it funny, you may not. I think you're right when it comes to sort of the business, the things that don't feel like this is adjacent to the creative mm-hmm. thing. It's steamed broccoli. I know it's important, yeah. but it's not the first thing I want to eat on the plate. You know what I mean? And that's that always gets me. And you know, folks will say, and to your point about, do I want to pay someone for this? I like to be hands-on in what I do as well. So, mm-hmm. you know, I reached out to you. It wasn't, I had someone yeah. reach out mm-hmm. to you. And, mm-hmm. but in it, and I'm always appreciative when anyone wants to be on the pod. And the thing that turns into sort of a challenge sometimes is folks are more like dicks. I just call it what it is. Some people are dicks that they just won't show up. And it's just like, you know, as I said earlier,
I'm with you.
I put a certain time in. So when someone just goes, yeah. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Good luck. You know what I mean? And
right. You got it. Hey, you got it, Chief.
You got it, play. I got this protein powder to eat. You know, I got to take these weights. You know, if I'm probably mentioned, I got to get these shots up. But
got to get this weight up. Got to hit. Got to lift this heavy shit. Yeah.
But it is a thing of like, I organize myself in such a way. And I was talking to my partner about this. I was telling her, I was like, yo, I get up at like 5:50 in the morning. Mm-hmm. You'll run, bang weights, and then I start the day and I get all of my stuff done in the course of the day. But in it, there's costs that come with that where I'm not staying up late. So all of those sort of choices that I make, not even sacrifices, choices that I make are for the benefit of me chasing the thing that I'm chasing. So mm-hmm. when someone is inserted in that, you know, let's say we're doing an interview, we're agreeing to do it at this time. And we're agreeing to do it in this capacity. Understand communication, you know, hey, I got to do it. You know, I got to move it, whatever. I get that. The lack of communication with all of the structure that's put in place. I just don't come in with some bullshit and like, yeah, so you work. You do that, right? You know,
that's all you. That's all you, right? Like you really just be.
You be out here, right?
Right. That's you. Right?
and that's sort of the thing. So when folks come to me and it's like, oh, well, you're not 10Xing it, bro. You're not doing your social media a certain way. I was like, it's me.
Right. This is my journey, my path.
The interview is the thing. The interview is the important thing. That's you know, mm-hmm. prioritizing it. And, you know, but I think, and this is sort of where the next question is going. I think being able to have those moments that take you away, like part of my process of developing questions and trying to structure this, I'm always kind of like, and we referenced a few books earlier, I'm always diving into some sort of book to get into the psyche of mm-hmm. have a better understanding of it and a better understanding of what am I curious about and what are they curious about? How do those two things come together? Or what would be the question that this artist, this guest has never been asked or hasn't been asked enough? Those are the things I'm shooting for. And in that vein, within you know, sort of your process, you've mentioned it a few different times. How important is basketball for you within your process of kind of, you know, breaking it up? Like, how important is that inserted in there?
Like I mentioned earlier, I always feel like I'm an athlete first, because that to me taught me everything I needed to know about life. Yeah. Like, my parents gave me the tools, the information, the structure, the wherewithal. They gave me everything. My family, my siblings did as well. But as far as like where I am today with my work and my core is just, it's sport. And like I mentioned earlier, just learning about teamwork, discipline, goal setting, work ethic, drive, communication. There's all these things that I've taken from sport and have taken with me to the art world. And I feel like that's where my success comes from. Just being able to have the repetition of mounting a paper on panel after being, after having months of drawing something, mounting it wrong. Then I just wasted all that time drawing something that was amazing. Now it'll never see the light of day because I wasn't really good at mounting paper on panel at the time. There's teamwork where goes back to the delegation aspect. I need a team. I need to work with people. I need to communicate what my ideas are, because there's someone out there who's a perfect fit for what I'm trying to do. And I might be a perfect fit for where they're trying to go. So there's all these different variables that for me just make sense in utilizing sport in my craft. But as far as basketball specifically, I mentioned Jordan earlier, but Jordan and Kobe for me, just there's an analogy I have too with them, but I grew up in a time where I watched Jordan play, and it just, like every other child, admired like the wizardry and the it just was so poetic how this man just moved on the basketball court, and it just was effortless. And yeah, I can't speak enough high praise or high words about just watching him and how it inspired me, not only in the basketball court, but in the studio. But the same with Kobe. Kobe, I felt like, here's my analogy for the two. Mike is the guy on the hill that I feel like you don't have access to. And never met the guy, but just from the optics. Yeah. Kobe, on the other hand, was more accessible. You ask a question, it's going to give the information. You ask the wrong question, we'll see where that goes. But at least he was willing to be accessible and give up the game to the younger players, you know, coming up, and share that information. And I thought, that's what I want to be. I want to be a vessel. I want to be someone that you can ask questions to, because I didn't take the traditional route. I didn't go to school. I did every oddball job. I'm doing art shows where I'm competing with like a band next to me. I said, once I become at a certain level, I'm not doing no art shows where I'm not even throwing no bands under the bus, but a band's playing next to me. I'm up here trying to, well, yeah, it's ballpoint pen. No. It's acrylic. It's not charcoal. Like, no. So
I get on.
All right. But to answer the question, just basketball has shown me and taught me so much about myself. It's just like that. I mean, it's cliche as it sounds, it's like that sanctuary. It's like, okay, I want to get away from art for a little bit and just tire myself out and just shoot 100 shots, run up and down the court. I hope none of the guys who I play with will listen to this, because they're probably gonna be like, well, you be yelling at us and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, well, because y'all don't play defense. Y'all don't be.
That Jordan.
But I mean, and you said it.
I'll throw this at you, because so in it, I've had this sort of contingent of like, you know, you have, of course, sort of even people that are your podcast people, right? And you know, people mm-hmm. you're around. And I remember talking to multiple people around mm-hmm. this time. This is like 2021, I guess, when Last mm-hmm. Dance came out. And mm-hmm. of course, you naturally like, who are you closest to the way that they're depicted in this documentary? And unsolicited people, like,
question.
Yeah, a lot of Jordan energy. I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, you got a lot of Jordan energy. I was like, so no Pippen? Mm-hmm. It's like, no, Jordan. You just tell people like, nah, this is why you're going to fail. So you should just do this.
Right.
He's like, you're pretty competitive and you're Warriors energy. And I was like, I don't know if that's true. And then I started watching it and I was like, all right, you guys might be right. I'll accept it.
Oh, yeah. You got and that's the thing. Like, you got to be able to receive feedback and criticism, et cetera, because that's what makes us who we are. You know, like, I'm gonna put myself out there. I'm obviously competitive, but I don't want to use the P word. I'm kind of petty. Like, people know, I'm probably gonna say like, you're really petty, but it's not petty to like harm someone. It's petty to, I hold on to this information to become better. I use it as fuel. Mm-hmm. And that goes with art as well. And I always tell you, like, I'm competing in art and they don't understand. I'm like, no, I'm competing because I want to level up. What do I need to do to level up? I go to these museums, shows, institutions, whatever. I'm competing with whomever from the 1800s. I'm competing with whomever from 2024, like, because I want to get better. Stagnancy is not an option for me. Like, I can't, that's not in me. So the competition aspect is, so I force myself to level up. I'm seeing what this person is doing. I'm seeing what that person is doing. It's like, oh, okay. Let me try something out. Let me try something different. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. At least I made the effort to not just continue to do the same thing over and over. And that goes back to the earlier point with like having different shows, is because I want to do a lot of stuff. Like, I want to see where else I can go while I'm here. But when you are who you are, like the comparisons to Jordan, people are either going to appreciate it or they're not. I don't care. Like, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. I'm doing what I love. I'm doing what I'm passionate about. I'm doing what makes my parents proud. Like, that's all I care about. And everything else is a moot point. Can care less. That's a you problem at that point. So,
yeah.
I don't want to sound too boisterous about it, but that I'm comfortable in making what I make, doing what I do. I'm still humble. I'm still trying to achieve. I'm always going to listen. I'm always going to be aware. But sometimes it's very direct, and you know, someone might not like that.
Yeah. No. I mean, you know, we're on the same page. I'm picking up what you're putting down, and you know, and I'm there. Like, you know, when I get sort of the natural, hey, it's only so many Black guys that can do a certain thing, so you guys are the same. It's like, I'm not. Mm-hmm. But
that's their reference point. I'm learning.
I do the thing. I don't know if you're a movie guy. I do the thing where it's like the scene from, I think, John Wick. And he's like, you working? Mm-hmm. It's almost that vibe. And when I see, like, you know, someone that's doing something, I was like, you could do that better. You didn't edit that episode, my G. And it's like, professional courtesy. And I get, it's going to sound, not for you, it's not going to sound wild. I get offended when someone's like, yeah, man, you and him do the same thing. I do that with all.
You could never. What are we talking about? Like, I'm sorry, about that all the time. Yeah, that's your thing over there. But it also had to. I'm glad you mentioned that, because for me, well, it looks like this person. It looks like that person. I don't want to use names because these names are like elite. Yeah. But I'm like, oh, that's just your reference point. I had to understand that's your reference point. You might not have a broad scale of art knowledge. You have this particular artist or person as a reference point, and that's how you compare it.
Sure.
So I had to understand that. It's like, oh no, I'm drawing inspiration from over here, and you're thinking it's from way over there. That's cool. It's a long, it's a lot of alphabets between A and Z. So I understand it, but yeah, I do get offended. Well, yeah, I probably still get offended. So yeah.
No, like I said, you know, we're on the same petty wave. It's all good. It's all good.
And I think that's what pushes me to do other stuff too.
Yeah, like, you know, I have, it's funny, like, I have enough conversations with curators and so on that kind of embolden me. And I know that, you know, people snipe at each other, right? But I've had enough conversations with curators and folks that I think are at a level that's higher than their vantage point. They are seeing things more broadly, right? And no, you get this. You understand what you're talking about. Not just, I don't know, bro. I had And before I move into like my last couple of questions, I had at an award, you know, like ceremony, what have you, where I was being honored with the biggest grant that given from this thing, right?
Congrats.
Thank you.
Congrats. Thank you.
And it funded a lot of last season's work. And I had this person there who was an artist type tell me that, oh yeah, you're not doing anything creative anyway. I had to pack all of my 6'4", all of it in. I was like, nah.
Right.
On a bunch of white people, and I'm about to accept an award that honors what you just said. Like, actually, I'm getting this money.
Right.
That's arts related. And it's like, all right, cool, bro. You're crushing it. You're here to see me, though. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's the thing. And, you know, I talk about it in, you know, because I'm the journalist guy, or I'm the this, or I'm the that. And I don't know if you have a version of this, but based on.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page. And, you know, it's always this sort of, I'm not in audition mode, you know, like
I'm doing it.
My work is A1. I do my stuff. The intent is A1. And, you know, that's sort of what it is. I'm not, you know, I'm humble. I'm not really talking, you know, my shit all the time. But the reality of it is I do this. You know, folks eventually they come to me when they choose someone else and they choose something that's kind of substandard. It's like, go ahead and get this scuffed version of what I do.
Right. Just bust down, Joanne. Come on.
Yeah. It just doesn't work. And the thing that gets me is the credit. You know, like you said earlier, now I want the credit. I want the credit too. And when folks try not to throw the credit out there, it's like, oh, okay, cool. You're going to act like, you know, we're just helping each other out. No. I'm professional at this.
You mentioned... like your story, I immediately thought of a close family member who, when I was younger, when I want to say I was maybe a year into saying, hey, I'm going to pursue art full time. So this is probably like 2009, 2010. And they said, oh, you know, you're still working on your little hobby? I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, excuse me?
Give a clap back, Tom.
All right, like, run it back to our boat, like, what? And that's part of me, how I describe the petties, holding on to that. It's not something I had to hold on to or I should have held on to, but I did because I wanted to prove, hey, just remember you saying that, because once I achieve, don't look at me crazy. Don't look at me like I got five heads. Like, you said that.
Yeah.
I was looking for that support. It wasn't there. And that's also another thing too. Like, I had to realize at that moment, it doesn't matter if they don't understand. As long as I understand, that's what matters. I need to be my biggest supporter, number one fan, et cetera. People need to see that. Some will piggyback and ride the bandwagon, whatever. But if not, cool. I'm still here to do my work and to follow my path and embark on this journey, no matter if it's alone or with people. I'd rather do it with people. Yeah. I'd rather have that sense of community. But at the same time, like, there's a, I want to say Drew Brees said it. He's problematic, but he said it gets lonely being great. Like, it'd just be you. It'd just be you. You have the vision. You want to execute it. You have, like, all these ideas. It'd be you.
You got to be an evangelist for yourself.
Right. Right.
And we don't like ambition. We don't like people who have goals. We rather see people on the struggle and on the come up, but when you get there or however they look at you getting there. Remember the whole thing about the, what is it? The overnight success. It's like, I've been doing this 10 years.
Yeah. Right. Everyone says that. Like,
it's all of that stuff. And then it's just like, you seem like you want it too much. What? What are you saying?
Why? What? Get away from me. Like, why are you even here? Who brought you around me? I don't need that.
Like,
I don't need that.
Do we have someone checking names at the door? What are we doing?
Right. Like, whose man's is this? I'm confused. And that's the thing. It's like, why would someone I love or someone who knows me bring that energy around? Like, this is already hard enough as is, being in a creative space where there's no guarantees, You know, it could be going tomorrow, whatever. Yeah. And you want to talk to me about, no, get away from me.
I've lost friends as a result of sort of me being on that. And I'm not even going on the Jordan wave of it all.
Yeah.
Doing my thing and just doing mm-hmm. my thing and actually even making right. space for them to do their thing because it's that mm-hmm. community thing. And you just start seeing like weird little things creep out. And I'm like, it goes to the point, and I'll move to this final question after I say this.
Sure.
It moves to this point of this Drew Brees thing. Like you said, you know, it's just, I'm doing this.
It is lonely.
And all I can say is when I start popping up on billboards, that's when people had green eyes suddenly.
Right.
It's very right. weird. It's very, very weird to me.
Hometown heroes for me, the Clips. I remember them referencing, this is early on too. I remember them referencing they had to go get hot elsewhere before they got hot in Virginia.
Yeah.
Which is like,
mm-hmm.
now mind you, me as a viewer, consumer of their, you know, product, well, not that kind of product, but just being observant.
That's great.
me being a, you know, a fan, you would think we would have that say-so. Like, no, you were hot here. But the person who's always in the trenches, they're going to tell you, no, we had to go to Philly. We had to go to the New Yorks and get grinded popping. Detroit and get grinded popping.
Mm-hmm.
It hurts. And I'm not going to ever talk any crazy about my Virginia. But it's like you said, I had to go elsewhere and do it. To let you know, hey, I was serious.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say, go where the best you can flourish. If it's not home, who can go somewhere else? Home will still be there. Mm-hmm. And if you have real support, the support will still be there. But if the best you is in Atlanta, go to Atlanta. If the best you is in Boston, go to Boston. Go wherever you need to go to flourish.
That's
like, they always tell you life is short. Like, go do it. And if you fail, guess what? You still got that support system at home. That's going to welcome you with open arms. It's okay. Let's start another game plan. Let's see what else we can do.
Those are bars right there. And that's really, really timely because it's definitely something that, you know, I've had a few conversations today in that vein, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. This is sort of the last, this is almost a rapid fire question.
Yeah, let's do it.
The rapid fire questions, but mm-hmm. you know, So ballpoint pens. Let's talk about it. Like, you know, I'm choosy. I'm looking at. I got. I always keep a little notepad with me. I write down my questions in there for inspiration. I always got. Mm-hmm. Always got that thing on me. So
yeah, definitely keep that thing. I keep that thing on me.
But you're doing art. You're crafting like works or what have you. Do you have like a favorite brand, a favorite type of pen? What stands out to you when you're like choosing sort of the instruments and ultimately how did pen come along?
A favorite brand, I'm going to shout them out since we've done business together recently. Favorite brand is Bic. And even if we didn't do business together, I've been using them since I started on this journey of just working with a pen for that matter. I've used every different style, Bic Crystal, the Stick Light, like there's just all these different options that you have, and I've test drove all of them. But how I got there is I think it's a funny story. So I'm in high school. I'm a senior in high school, and this goes back to the competitive aspect. I'm a senior, and we're drawing something or another, and this freshman is sitting cat a corner from me. I don't remember how the conversation came up, but she said, my mother or my grandmother uses ballpoint pen. That way she doesn't make mistakes. So for me, it was like an aha moment. It's like, oh, I got to use ballpoint pen. I don't want to make mistakes. So from that moment in 2001, fall 2001 to now. So I guess that's about 23 years now. I've used ballpoint pen as the main focus. And I love the feedback that I receive. And I think early on when I started doing shows, it's, oh, is that pencil? Is that graphite? Like, what is that? I'm like, oh, it's ballpoint pen. They're like, oh, wait, what? And right, it's like, wait, excuse me, part like. But I also took it very serious because I don't see ballpoint pen or ink artists in museums, in these institutions that we frequent. So that was, there's a lot of goals and check marks that I have mentally that over time I look to, you know, check off and achieve. But yeah, the ballpoint pen thing, it you know, I mentioned earlier, I was framing my work. And when people would see it, they're like, oh, okay, it's cool. And they're like, oh, it's ballpoint pen. Wow, like, wait, what? And there was that glass barrier, that plexi barrier. So when I learned how to mount paper on panel, it took that barrier away and people could really get up close with the piece and get real intimate with it and be like, oh, wow, wait. I'm sorry, you said now, this is really ballpoint pen? And it's like, yeah. And back then it used to be, that used to be the great feeling. But now that I'm older, wiser, smarter, whatever have you, I want it to be a great piece of work first. And if they find out it's ballpoint pen on the back end, cool. Like at the end of the day, I still want the piece to be, you know, what it is. I want to still execute that vision and share that with the people and have them build rapport with it.
Thank you. That's a great answer. So that's kind of it for the real podcast. And now I gotta hit you with these rapid fire questions. And
definitely,
as I tell everyone, do not overthink these. Yeah. All right.
Jordan over LeBron, Nike over Adidas. What else?
Okay. All right. So the first one is basketball related.
Okay.
Who is your favorite? It was going to be player, but I've changed it. Who is your favorite? Okay. What's your favorite team currently? And what was your favorite team growing up?
Well, this is tricky. Yeah. This is tricky. Growing up, it was Phoenix.
Nice.
It was definitely Phoenix. I root for teams because of their logo. I love their design.
Yes, you should.
Which is crazy. Like the Raiders, I root for the Raiders because I saw when I was growing up, every hip hop video, NWA, who else? Just every rap video had Raider hat, Raider jacket, whatever. But the Suns, my dad would always have TDY. He was in the Air Force. He would go to Phoenix to the base out there, and he'd always bring me like a T-shirt or something back. So I just kept wearing it. And I'm like, I guess I'm a Suns fan. Nebraska Cornhusker, same thing. Oh, yeah. But it was Phoenix, and then I jumped off the bandwagon after they got rid of Nash. But I've always been a players guy. I root for players. And if you really notice, the NBA since – really, Jordan came along, not even Jordan, Magic and Bird has been about the player. Magic versus Bird, Jordan versus, it's always about the player. So now I've always loved Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, like even prior to the whole explosion. I just have been a fan of just this guy who's really changed the game. It's just inexplainable, but now I root for Golden State every now and then. I still root for Phoenix. I just really root for players. I like seeing, I'm a two-way guy. So if the guy's a defender and, you know, if he plays both sides of the ball, I'm rooting for that guy.
Yeah.
Cause I'm not big on just guys who are out there just scoring a million points and then just giving up 999 foul on the other end.
Oh, so Harden.
So, you said it. Not he's cool and he's changed the game in a way as well. It's just I don't respect it. It's just not how I enjoy basketball. I like the guy, like, look, and I guess that goes back to the Michael Jordan thing, more so Kobe, because I think Pippen guarded more of the greater guys. But whoever the best player on the other court, on the other side of the court is, I'm guarding that guy.
Yeah.
I'm going to put up 45. I'm going to make sure your average is 30. Cool. We're going to knock that down about 17 a night, 18, 19, 20, whatever. So that's what I appreciate. It's like that goes back to the competitive nature. It's like I like those type of players. Like, yo, I got this guy. I'm locked down. Nothing. So yeah, that's Phoenix back then, kind of Phoenix now, Golden State every now and then, but mainly players now.
Okay, since we're talking ball, I gotta throw mine out there, I guess.
Oh yeah, I can talk ball forever.
Similar thing, because mm-hmm. I think me and you are about the same age, in the same age group, and obviously my parents, we Baltimore, we didn't have a basketball team, you know?
Right. Oh well, the Wizards. I mean the Bullets. I went to a lot of Bullets games as a kid.
But
no Bullets. No Calvert Chaney, Chris Webber, George Mirasan, no. Ross Strickland, Juwan Howard, Chapel Hill. Hey, Chapel Hill beat Duke. Gotta say that on the pod. Chapel Hill. Big Chapel Hill.
Tracy Murray from the three.
Come on.
One of my teachers in middle school, he was Sam Cassell's uncle. So I would always that's the Baltimore look. But anyway.
Right. Let's say that's
it would be
hopefully they get that Baltimore reference when they hear this.
It would be we always would get like merch and stuff. So whatever the teams that were winning, but we were like pretty much strictly a Bulls house, like throughout the 90s and then like at the 2000s, just like, and we're here for the Lakers. I was always sort of the sideline Spurs guy. I was always a Spurs guy. Spurs and Heat.
Good basketball.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's only really I'm trying to think if there's two different versions.
Alonzo.
Okay, Dan Marley, Thunder Dan, Tim Hardaway, Ronnie Cicely.
Yes.
I'm with you.
Those
I'm with you.
Having that vibe of like, yo, I'm going to do this East Coast team, but I'm still like, because Tim Duncan is my favorite player. So it's just like, I'm still in this direction. You know, fundamentals are untouched. It's like,
untouched. You can't not lose with the basics. Like,
I'm going to get some MVPs off of this.
they talk about it. It's like, who had a better career, Kobe or Tim Duncan? And it's like, you can go either way. You can go either way.
Yes. So this is the second one. So you know, I definitely this is a Baltimore centric podcast. We stretch outside of Baltimore, but Baltimore's the home. Mm-hmm. Where do you spend most of your time at in Baltimore? Like, any places that you like?
I'm a hermit. I'd be at the studio working, but as far as I'm trying to think, who do I want to give publicity to? other than the gym, dang, that's a good question. Where do I be at? I like to, so here's my running joke that my friends have given me. I'd be outside, but I don't be outside. Like all the cool, nice restaurants, like I've been there, but no one ever.
But I think you explained it though. But I think you got it though, because you know, I used to be out there pretty regularly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Got drinks in different places. I got a signature drink on menus. Got coffees out
right.
There. And I was like, I need to be a recluse now. I can't be out here anymore. It's just like, look, I'm very noticeable. I've had, my girl reminded me, because I'll be down. Like, man, nobody cares. And she was just like, yo, a dude stopped in traffic to say, yo, Rob. And I was just like,
hey, that's him.
Literally. So it's just
keep it down.
It's like both of them. It's like, yo. I'm like, I'm 6'4", so I can't really hide.
Yeah, you can't, yeah. Yeah.
Just like.
Put him in the post.
Literally, like your boxes, well, you know, and it's literally that. But yeah, it's just like some of those places I go to. You know, sometimes folks will invite me. You know, I have friends that are chefs and things like that. But I spend most of my time in an arts district. It might be Station North or something like that. And I go where the good coffee is at. I go where the interesting folks are at. But really, my thing is to your point, like the studios and the crib. You know, I can
bring
my bedrooms to a studio. That's just what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to
put that work in. Put that pain in.
100%.
And I want to save money. What I want to save money, aspect doesn't really matter. But it's like, I'd rather be at the gym. I'd rather be at the studio. Like I said, I'd be out, but it's like, nah, wrap this up. I want to get either some shots up. I want to get some pieces done. You choose. Like, so, yeah. I always say, too, for me to scale even further, I need to be outside and campaign and kiss babies and shake hands and let people know I exist, which is fine. I feel like I do a great job of that via socials. But when people meet me, I think that's a completely different thing. I feel like I'm very personable, very animated, especially when you talk sports or just anything I'm passionate about, as I'm sure anyone is. But yeah, I'd rather spend my time getting better. That way, in time, you know, I can open a business that I would want to spend time at or whatever, and then put my work in there. But yeah, I'm, what do they say? Keep the main thing the main thing. Like, I like being out with my friends, whatever. But I'd rather be putting that pain in the studio and just getting the work done.
Yeah, can't wait for that Rob Lee and Tommy Mitchell podcast on the state of basketball.
Hey,
look.
Hey, you let me know. Hey, you said be in Station North. My studio is in Station North. It's right there next to Guilford Brewery.
We'll stop by anytime. We will chop it up, my G.
Definitely.
I got one last one for you, and it goes a little something like this. You know, it doesn't have to be good. I mean, it has to be good. It doesn't have to be healthy. What is your go-to like meal? I have an African buddy. I have an African buddy who's really funny. He's like, he's a doctor. Mm-hmm. He was just like, yeah, I'm trying to eat nasty this weekend. And I'm like, yeah. What did you mean by that, bro?
Oh man, you got to be more specific, sir. Like, you talking crazy right now.
All right, look at a mirror, my G.
We're like, what? Oh man, what? Let me think. I love breakfast food. Like, I can eat breakfast food all day long. But what's a meal that?
It's like, this is your, you know, people say comfort meal, for lack of a better term. Let's say, what is that?
Yeah.
That vein or what have you? Like, when I think about something I'm really looking for, and I'm kind of snobbish about it, for me, it's always New Orleans food. So, birthday was a couple of weeks ago. I made one.
Happy belated.
Thank you. Made one request. I was talking to my girl. I was like, yo, can you make me some red beans and rice? And she was like, absolutely. And she knows, because I'm a snob, she's like, yeah, then Dewey sausage. I was like, thank you, because if you put turkey in there, I'm not going to eat it.
Right. You can keep that. Throw the whole dish away. Like, what are we doing? You cook that? No, put that in the trash. No, I don't want that.
Why would you spend time on that?
Right. Make that one with the trash can.
is that vein or what have you? I mean, you know, I had, you know, went to the sushi spot in DC the day before, you know, love Makoto, really dope, had a great experience. And then I had the homemade, red beans and rice, you know, it's a religion, you know, we out here. And I'm a little bit that way about shrimp and grits too. You know, it's the same vibes. It's like, it has to be done a certain way. It's like, if you're not going to do it the way it needs to be done, then don't do it.
Right. Don't. Yeah. And, so it depends. I guess it depends on where I'm at. It depends on, yeah, I guess it really depends on where I'm at. Like, I've really toned down red meat a lot over the past probably 10 years. I always say I do the vegan thing like maybe 5 out of 7 days a week. But there's certain things I just can't, like you said, shrimp and grits. I haven't had good etouffee in I don't know how long.
Yeah.
Like, there's just certain things I'm like, when I'm out, like I'm out here in LA, I know there's certain things I'm going to have while I'm out here. But if there's one thing, gosh, I don't want to hold you, but okay, there we go. I like this Korean dish, bibimbap.
A lot.
So, I'm sure you're familiar with the spot in Colombia called Bibimbap.
Yeah,
that's like, I drive out there. I'm about to talk crazy now. I drive out there. I'll get two bowls. I'll eat one there. By the time I get back home, because you know it's about 25, 30 minutes to get back to Baltimore. As soon as I get back home, I eat the other one. Like, it's, and I'm probably gassing it up, but it's just that good.
Yeah.
But there's a new spot. Maybe I should give them some love. Moki Charm City Poke Bowl or something. It's right there at Harbor East. And I walk over there and I get the same bibimbap dish every time. That's like, yeah, that's one of those things. Matter of fact, that's what I'm getting while I'm out here. But that's one of those things I really, I just, I, And that's how you know I enjoy it. I can't even put into words how much I enjoy it. But that's probably the dish. And I love eggs. So throw a sunny side up egg on anything and I'll come running.
It's a great response. It's a great answer. And that's kind of it. You're off the hot seat. You know, one, I want to thank you so much for coming on. This has been truly a...
No, of course.
And two, I want to invite and encourage you to share with the listeners where they can check you out, the socials, the website, all of that good stuff. The floor is yours.
Definitely. Thank you. One, again, I'm appreciative for you having me. I'm sorry for being so long-winded and passionate when it comes to sports. As far as where they can reach me, you can go to my website, Tommy Mitchell, and the L's are one. So TommyMitchell.com. Same on across the socials, TommyMitchell.11. And you can find me in the National Portrait Gallery one day.
There you have it, folks. I want to again thank Tommy Mitchell for coming on and chatting with us on this podcast and sharing a bit of his story and his journey. And I'm Rob Lee, saying that there's art, culture, and community in and around your neck of the woods. You've just got to look for it.